welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys toss a little bit of extra calories on your movie-going experience. Since JT and Benny were so adamantly against seeing the Taylor Swift concert in theaters, which killed it this weekend at the box office, by the way, we decided that we were going to put on the Trial of the Batman. Now, this came about a few weeks ago when we had John Rocha on the show, and he was exclaiming about how much he enjoyed the Batman. I agree. Benny and JT did not. So we decided that we were going to settle this courtroom style, and we were going to put the Batman on trial. Now, it can't just be me versus Benny and JT. That's a lot of brain power between those two. So I had to bring in an even bigger brain power, and that would be the one and only Jacob Blunden. Jacob, thank you for being my partner, my co-defendant of the Batman.
You're welcome. I have already gone toe-to-toe with JT over this movie before. I re-listened to that, so I got a little sneak peek of preview of what his arguments might be today. But I really love this movie. This was my favorite movie of last year. It's so well made, so incredibly well directed that, yeah, I had to jump on here and defend it. I still do not understand how people don't like this movie.
I agree, and I'm very glad you're on my team. But of course, this can't be a trial unless you bring in an acclaimed and esteemed judge. And so for that, we reached out to our good friend, the one Mr. Adam Collins. Your Honor, Mr. Collins, sir. Thank you for being our judge.
Oh, pleasure is mine. Thank you for rising and sitting simultaneously. I appreciate that. I am excited to get into the meat and potatoes of this debate because, you know, when the Batman came out, the anticipation, you know, was pretty out of hand. So I think no matter where you landed on this, on your opinion of this movie, opinions are going to be hot. Even though the movie's had some time to settle down, and we've all lived with it for a while, opinions are still very, very intense. And as far as I'm concerned, jury's still out. I am excited to hear both sides of this.
And that's all we ask. Even-keeled pair of ears to listen. To listen to why this movie, and me and Benny's opinion, I'm curious actually a little bit to hear how hard Benny's going to go. Because I know what my feelings are, and Benny sometimes would go really hard to the hoop. So I think he might slam dunk this sucker. So I'm excited to get into it.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to our judge to hear our opening arguments.
Yes. So with that in mind, I'd like to hear from the defense. I'd like to hear your opening statements, and followed by that, I think we'll get to the prosecution. But gentlemen, you know, as far as the Batman's concerned, what is your defense, your thesis statement, if you will?
Well, Jacob, if you're okay with it, I'll lead off with my opening statement. Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the listening jury, I beg you to cast aside your nostalgia prejudices and embrace a different type of Batman. A Batman who is vengeful, Batman who is intelligent, cunning, capable, but above all else, is flawed. The Batman is not only one of the best interpretations of the Caped Crusader, I think it is the best. Batman is always referenced as the world's greatest detective.
Objection, Your Honor,
Reeve,
objection!
What Matt Reeve was able to accomplish.
Overruled, let him continue.
Was he created a true neo-noir detective story that happened to have Batman in it? The story is compelling, gritty, rich, filled with complex characters, iconic imagery, solid emotional connections, but yet still feels grounded in reality. This film not only boasts a very talented cast, but also an impressive production value and a score that is worthy of being called a Batman score. All of this combines to a truly memorable and rewarding tale of growth and what it means to be a superhero.
All right. Co-defense.
So I'm not going to be quite as elegant as my co-counsel. The Batman to me gave me something I had never gotten from a Batman film. And that was, the Batman's a hero. He is actually a superhero. He is a man who realizes and recognizes through this movie that the way he goes about how about his vengeance and about his attacks on and trying to scare people is wrong. He realizes that he has inspired the wrong type of people and recognizes at the end, I need to change that. And I love that about it. The scene at the end of the film where you have a little girl looking up with hope and love at this man who has just saved her. It inspires that Batman is a hero. There is a reason children love him. There is a reason why he resonates with a younger audience and an older audience. Batman isn't always dark, serious, and has to 100% be dark and serious the entire time, and only that type of Batman. You can have ones where across generations love this character and love this movie. And the entire aspect of this, yes, this movie is dark and brutal, and there are elements of it that are extremely dark, but there is also elements that are extremely funny. There are also elements that are overwrought with emotion and just absolute pure beauty that you just get completely enamored in this film. It is the only successful use of the Craig Frazier's use of the stupid Mandalorian cinematography is the only time I've ever seen it actually be used well. He's the only one who could use it. Mandalorian uses it awfully. Every other film has ever used it awfully. This is the only one I've ever seen actually use it well, and I can't remember what it's called. But this film has a deep resonance in me as well. I love every single aspect of it. I think Robert Pattinson is the single best Bruce Wayne and Batman we have ever seen on screen. I think he nails the role perfectly. You can see the pure torture inside of him every single time he's on screen. I think you have a very realistic, reluctant hero. I think everything about this works incredibly well, and that is why The Batman is a fantastic film.
All right. Thank you, co-counsel. And that was plenty eloquent. In terms of my opinion on it, I can't tell you where I land, but in terms of your eloquence, don't sell yourself short, young man. That said, I also think we need to officially consider this stupid Mandalorian cinematography defense. I think that has a certain ring to it. Stupid Mandalorian cinematography rolls nice. Right off the tongue. Moving over to the prosecution, GTE and the artist currently known as Benny, I believe. All right, gentlemen, take it away with your opening statements.
Would you like to start, Benny, or I?
I'll gladly go first. You can close this out.
Please go ahead.
Gentlemen of the jury, I have walked this earth as a nerd for nigh on 50 years. I have seen every superhero movie from Roger Gorman's Fantastic Four to Endgame and everything in between. And imagine my disappointment going into a Batman movie whose only 5 good scenes are ripoffs of Zack Snyder's Watchmen and The Crow. It was in the mid, and they were linked together by a convoluted, near ridiculous storyline that made Batman seem more impotent and incompetent at every turn. At the end, I'm surprised that he did not kill himself from his own ignorance. He managed not to figure out any of the clues. He managed not to defeat any of the victims, any of the villains. He managed to do nothing right in this entire film. I wish that Gotham had drowned so they did not have to see their one hero humiliate himself as he did in this film. And through our righteous prosecution, I will demonstrate to you and everyone out there how god awful this boring, dreary, emo movie truly is.
Bravo.
Okay.
Passion. Oh, bringing the passion on the side.
Well, bringing the lightning as always, you know, former man of the cloth as you are. I do appreciate the passion. Now, JTE.
Yes.
I know you're of you know, similar emotions and intellectualisms. Please,
yes.
Continue.
This is what I'll say about this film. In a lot of ways, it is the movie equivalent of a succubus. It's beautiful from afar, has a beautiful song to it. But the closer you get, the more you see underneath that beauty of cinematography, that beautiful score, those beautiful, talented actors across the screen. That is a soulless monster that has a weak script, poor character motivation. And I'm going to say it again, a poor script. A script is the soul to a movie in a lot of ways. If you do not have a script, you don't even get a green light. You don't get all the money. You don't get all the actors. I truly feel like this movie fundamentally gets Batman wrong as a character. And I'm okay with a new version of Batman, a new part, you know, a new, but if you're going to do something new, you need to build it up so that I can accept it. This movie kind of throws you right into it without any of the character development that you would get in a much better Batman film, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. And for Moose to say that this is the best Batman film ever made, when The Dark Knight and Batman Begins does everything that this film was trying to do so much better, is just, I almost want taken stricken from the court's records because it shouldn't even be out there for the public to hear. It's troubling. It troubles me just hearing it. At the end of the day, I am not going to deny this film at times looks amazing. I'm not going to deny that it has a beautiful score, very talented actors. But unfortunately, if I don't care about the characters and I think the story is poorly put together, at the end of the day, I'm just not going to care about the story. I'm not going to connect to the characters. So I am here to argue that while a very pretty, beautiful cinematography, beautiful music, a succubus, as you would say, once you get close, it sucks the soul out of you because you realize there is no soul and it needs one for itself. The Batman is the succubus of the Batman films.
Gentlemen, thanks again for your opening statements. We're now going to go to break. We'll be back with our opening debate.
Now, America's most exciting and legendary movie hero comes to the big screen like you've never seen him before and faces his greatest danger, the Phantasm.
I want you.
Can't be too careful with all those weirdos around.
In a soaring new full-length motion picture adventure, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, rated PG, starts December 25th only in theaters.
As a child,
I want to find out who I am by finding my parents.
Now he unleashes his rage, determined to overtake Gotham by destroying its greatest hero. Michael Keaton.
What do you want?
Danny DeVito.
You don't really think you'll win, do you?
Michelle Pfeiffer. Batman Returns, June 19th. Directed by Tim Burton. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome back, one and all, to the court of Batman law, apparently. okay, so moving into the opening debates, going back to the defense, you heard that impassioned plea from the prosecution for films that aren't the Batman. Please open up the debate, and then we'll volley back and forth, and we'll do our best to, as I said, maintain decorum. But, you know,
I would like the court to acknowledge. I would really like the court to just acknowledge a comment JTE made that he couldn't connect with these characters. So is that JTE admitting he wanted to see the Waynes get killed again? Because that's the apparently the only way that he can connect with a Batman?
No. I do not need that to connect to a character. What I need to see is a character go through ups and downs and actually become with creative ways to become the Batman. This movie's Batman walks around town like he's on Halloween 24/7. He doesn't sneak through the shadows or go through the window. He knocks on the front door of a nightclub where the bad guys stay and says, "Hey, it's me. I'm here to see the Penguin." That's the most un-Batman, unless you're talking about Adam West Batman, who is like showing up at dance clubs and walking around and everyone's just like, "Oh, there's Batman." For me, and this is why I'll say, the reason I say that is because fundamentally when I look back at Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and I am going to compare this movie to those films because I think those movies did it perfectly. His persona as a Batman, I understood why he became Batman. He had a fear of bats. He has a line where he says, "I want them to fear them like I fear them." And he uses his persona
the line is
as
dread. I know, because I dread. Lost a schmodown to that question.
Well said. But my main point is he uses his costume as a symbol to put fear into his villains. It is something that is used to fight crime. In this movie, I have no idea why he's dressed like a bat. I have no idea. I'm not going to take what I learned from the comics or from the Batman films previous, because I'm in this world now. I'm trying to understand what this Batman is coming from, and I have no idea why he's dressing like a bat in this movie and why he's walking around and people aren't accepting it to the point where they're like, "Come on to our crime scene."
I never want to hear anyone bitch and complain about, we've seen all this before. Don't show us Uncle Ben being shot. Don't show us any of this before. I'm sorry. Because
that's not what I'm asking for.
Thank you.
I'm not asking for
that. Yeah, but you are. That's exactly your argument. Your argument is he dressed like a bat? You fucking know why he's dressed like a bat.
Not in this movie. I'd have no idea in this movie why he's dressed like a bat.
Did you miss the part where this is year two of him being Batman, right? Like, he hasn't quite like figured everything out.
It's just said year 2 months. It's just said year 2 months. Because it's just said 2 months.
How is the MC? How is Edward Norton Hulk?
Gamma ray, there's a whole montage.
No. That movie doesn't tell you. That movie doesn't tell you. It assumes that you know. That movie does not tell you.
There's a difference between somebody who is in an accident and becomes a monster and somebody who chooses to become the Batman and actually puts all his money and changes his whole life into dedication to become this crime fighting villain. That is something that a character has to go through, and I need to see something into his psyche that brings him to that point. Whereas the Hulk just hits with gamma radiation, becomes a monster. He's on the run. He didn't make a choice. Batman is making a choice. He is the one superhero who does not have superpowers.
So gentlemen, I appreciate, just for the moment though, I'll just remind you all that the Incredible Hulk is not on trial, but there is a trial of the Incredible Hulk movie. If you haven't seen it, you should go check it out. Continue.
Okay, to Jacob's point, this is a flawed Batman, right? At the end of the movie, he realizes the path that he has currently been on in year two of Batman, of him being Batman, is not necessarily the right path. That he chooses to not be a character of vengeance, but more of a character of hope, right? That's the whole story in redemptive art. To defend the scene that you're talking about where he walks up to the club, what does he do to the two bouncers? He throttles the shit out of them. And then what does he do to the next bouncer? He throttles him. And the next guy that shows up, he throttles him. So for you to be like, that's very un-Batman-like, I'm sorry, did Batman not just beat the crap out of a bunch of bad guys to go interrogate the Penguin? How is that not Batman-like?
Batman doesn't use guns. He is not the Punisher. He is not going to go in there and brutally defeat people with just pure strength and martial arts. He is a person of stealth. He is a person of surprise. He is something that's lurking in the shadows that the criminals fear.
Did
he's
you not
somebody
get that from his first?
Do those two guys look scared to you? Guys in the subway look scared to you?
Hey, we can't bring in outside influences, but you can bring in outside influences that have
of
to.
What?
You're saying this is who Batman is. He has to do this and this. Well, we can't then go, you can assume that knowledge.
He's using your argument against you because you're saying, no, I want this. Well, in this world. This is Batman. This
if the director showed it to me,
they can show up to the front door and throttle your bouncer.
But he's showing you. Batman goes in and throttles people. That is how this Batman works.
But if I can interject.
The film opens that way. Him coming in and throttling all the people walking off the train station.
We agree.
From
we agree
the shadows.
gentlemen, we agree there's lots of throttling and lots of shadows. Betty Joker, please. I heard you trying to pipe in. We haven't heard from you yet. I'd like to hear from the co-counsel from the prosecution.
I think the biggest issue is we're looking at the internal logic of this movie. A lot of people will defend it saying, well, this is Batman year two. But here's the thing. If you're completely incompetent, you're never going to get to a year three. So in this movie, if you go through the entire movie, he doesn't figure out any clues that are left for him. Every time there's a clue, someone else, the only time it's ever revealed is, for example, he'll go to the Penguin, you're the rat. And he's like, are you dumb as fuck? Don't you speak Spanish? That's how it's revealed to him. At the end, when he goes to see the Riddler, the Riddler's like, oh my God, you're a fucking moron. I thought you knew what was going on. He never figures out any of the clues. And only when they're shoved in his face by someone that's completely bewildered by his ignorance does he ever figure out anything. The issue is the picture they're painting of Batman is of someone that's so incredibly stupid, all he can do is punch lowlifes in the face. He's not a detective. He's barely a functioning adult.
I mean, he figures out the thumb drive at the beginning of the film. He figures out everything with the old manor they're about to blow up my place. Like, I push back on that. That there are elements where he is a detective and he figures out things very easily. Like, he does follow the clues and he is able to figure out those sort of things.
And every clue that's presented to him is he's the one that's figuring it out. Every single clue that's presented, he figures out. Look, every detective has a systematic process, right? Every detective goes through every motive. That's why he's look at like a Hercules Poirot, right? Or Hercule Poirot, excuse me. Hercule Poirot will accuse every single person who's potentially a murder suspect as he's eliminating things off of his list, right? And then eventually he comes to the valid conclusion. That's what detectives do. That's what Batman's doing. He's the world's greatest detective. We finally got him being a detective.
So if we really got him being a detective, though, he would have solved the crime, which he did not. All he managed to do was literally go and walk someone outside so the Riddler could kill him and then not save Gotham. Like, the two crimes that are happening in this movie, he doesn't figure them out. He literally helps them happen. That's how bad of a detective he's presented as being.
He's good at riddles. We'll give you that. He's pretty good at riddles. He can look at a haiku and understand exactly what it's trying to say. The problem with this movie is also, if you're going to, the director, I feel like, is asking you to just, hey, it's Batman. Give him the Batman pass. When he shows up at the crime scene in the beginning and there's like 50 cops, everyone's there. And he just walks in like he's part of the forensics crew. And I'm sitting here like it felt, for the first time watching a Batman movie, it felt kind of ridiculous. At least when it happened in The Dark Knight, he's disappearing and it's one-on-one with Gordon and he's like out of there. So this one,
he walks in. Gordon takes him in because the police chief gives Gordon shit for bringing the Batman into his active crime scene.
He should have been arrested the second he walks on this. He's a vigilante criminal who's fighting breaking the rules for him.
The movie establishes Gordon breaks the rules for him.
Gordon's not in charge. Gordon's boss says, why is he here? Get him out of here.
But then he goes, okay, I'm going to go with you, Gordon, but that's only because we have a past. We were partners at one point in time.
Yes.
So the chief gives Gordon the trust that Gordon is then bestowing upon Batman.
But what has Batman done to gain that trust from he's supposed to be, to me, the best Batmans are always the ones who are working on the outside of the law. At no point in The Dark Knight, literally, he's like, send the dogs at me. I am the Dark Knight. I'll take the victim. I'll take the fall.
He's not that until the end of The Dark Knight. But can't play that card. He's running in at one point in time with a SWAT team.
Yeah.
No, he knows he's not with the SWAT team. He's literally taking out the cops while he's taking out the Joker's men. Because the cops are like, we got to take this guy out. All I'm saying is this Batman, looks like he should have a locker in the police department where he can hang up his suit. Because even after he
knows how to open it,
you ask what's he done and why have they earned this relationship. They then show you this is why they have the relationship. Because when they go back and go check through the car, Gordon and Batman are working together. They show you this. That they can work together. They might not show it in you in the order that you want it, but the movie does show you this stuff.
It shows it works with Gordon. I have no problem with him working with Gordon. It's working
so
with
Gordon, the entire Gordon vouches thing. For him. Gordon He's goes, not working. I'm vouching for him. He's coming in here because I need his help. That is what he's doing. It's Gordon. The movie shows you that. That isn't a very deep reading of it. The movie literally shows you, hey, Gordon is using this guy because that is who he trusts. More than anyone else, that is who he trusts. And then it shows you it again in more and more scenes throughout the film that Batman is the only one Gordon trusts.
I would argue in the movie when they're in the garage, they almost say that they don't really trust each other and that it's more of like he's using him because he needs him, not so much that he trusts him. Gordon and him have that back and forth while they're in the
garage. There's no way that if there was lack of trust, there would be no way that Gordon would have allowed Batman to strike him. Batman was surrounded by 25 police officers.
He got chased by him.
Right. And he's sitting in the room. All of these guys are prepared to arrest him. Gordon buys himself a couple of times. There wouldn't be a trust issue if Gordon had gone up to him and been like, you need to take this key. You need to hit me. You need to get out of here. And then 10 minutes later, show up at the same location as the Batman and start talking about the case again. Like, there's obviously a very mutual trust. And there's a moment right when Bruce is about to leave the Riddler's house after the Riddler has been caught. And he thinks he's going to be exposed as Bruce Wayne. And as he's walking out, he immediately just, the one thing he says to Gordon, almost like a farewell to him, is he just looks at him and he goes, you're a good cop. And he walks away. And throughout the movie, it's established that Gordon can't trust anyone on the police force. Even the people that were his partner were corrupt. They were targeted. So obviously, Batman, Bruce Wayne, went after the one good cop that he knew he could potentially trust and who could potentially help him change Gotham. And he formed that immediate trust and bond with him. And Gordon saw the same thing. He knows he's a vigilante. He knows he's breaking the rules. He knows he's breaking the law. But he knows that this guy can help him change Gotham. Because at the core, that's all Gordon and Batman ever want to do.
Well, Moose, we're going to look. Thank you for explaining how great Batman Begins establishes the Gordon Batman relationship. Because what this you just said immediately
the exact same thing. It just doesn't spend 2 hours fucking doing it because we can see it within 3 minutes and go, cool, yep, I'm smart enough to pick that up.
Well, here's the thing, though, if we're talking about like reading into the movie, you know, and then not having to show us things, they're solving these crimes in front of cops. That the movie itself is saying is completely established that all these people are dirty. So they're going through these supposedly mysterious things with all these people watching. And on top of that, despite the fact that they're around all of these crooked cops and they're saying that, well, we're the only ones that we can trust. Despite that, they appear to be the only two people in a city of millions that don't know that Carmen Falcone is running the police. Like the hooker at the bar knows, the corrupt cop knows, Jim down the street knows. The only two people in all of Gotham too stupid to figure it out were these two guys without someone literally beating one of the cops, making a recording of it, and playing it so it's so obvious for them.
It's not a matter of them figuring out or knowing it.
That's what makes them attractive.
They're not corrupt. They're not on Carmine's Falcone's payroll where everyone else is. The reason why they're not figuring this out is because they're not corrupted. Everyone else is. They figure it out. They put it together, right? They use their detective skills. They're not working for Falcone, who pretty much owns the town and owns everybody who does. People who did figure this out stumbled upon it and were then killed. So I have nobody that's living to be able to question, and the only people that are on Falcone's payroll, they're going to remain silent.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yes. So I've heard compelling arguments on both sides already. I appreciate the spirited nature of this debate. And while I did call for decorum, I do want to clarify that did not forbid cursing. That is in the spirit of this yes. debate. Now, that is allowed in this court. Now, that said, I would like to hear both sides comment on the role of Miss Selina Kyle in this film, because she's a significant portion. She contributes to a significant portion of the movie. So no right or wrong way to start this off, but I do think it bears acknowledgement. So let's go there.
I'm really excited to hear you defend Anna Hathaway over.
I'm not going to defend Anna
Hathaway. I'm really excited for this.
Here's what I'll say. And I'm glad, Adam, this is exactly where I wanted to go next. So you and I are supposed to go here. I don't dislike Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman. I just like her storyline throughout this whole film. And when the movie was over, I think the film would have been stronger if you just took that whole storyline right out of it. Because when it got towards the end and her and Falcone had this whole confrontation and the way Batman's work with her, it felt like busy work. It felt like it was distracting from the actual story, which I want to see, which was the Riddler versus Batman. And while it does interplay into the overall plot, I think it could easily have been exercised from this film, and we would got rid of this 3-hour runtime and got this to a much more manageable, maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Because I really don't think her character brings anything to, especially Robert Pattinson's Batman. He doesn't really learn anything from her. And the chemistry for me was non-existent. Now, I know that's subjective, but I'm able to bring some of my subjective thoughts in here. I just saw no chemistry between these two whatsoever. And I'll say this, some of my favorite interactions between Selina Kyle and Batman in the previous films and comics is when she's not Catwoman and he's not Batman. I like when those two get to play outside of the costumes, not just inside the costumes. When I saw them in the costumes of this movie, I felt no connection. Just two people on Halloween who met up and found each other attractive. To me, you look back at Batman Returns, when Michael Keaton and Michelle Pfeiffer are at that dance towards the end of the film when the penguin crashes, it's those characters' interactions outside of their nighttime personas which made that even more interesting. This movie didn't really have that, and therefore I think it suffered because of it, and I didn't buy the relationship. And I think, honestly, her part of the movie is something that is just – I don't know why it's in there. I get it's interlocks with the story somewhat, but it just detracts from the main pulse of the film, which is the Riddler – and Batman and all that stuff. And I don't hate the Riddler in this movie, so I'll say that. But and I don't hate her. I don't blame most of the actors in this movie. My biggest issue with this film is the writing and the character motivations.
I think Catwoman is needed to give Batman the, oh, hey, I'm in my ivory tower. Hey, I'm in my the actual realization of what he is doing isn't helping people.
How does she show that?
How she shows that is because when she's basically every single time they meet up, she's like, you are the wealthy and you are using all your money from an ivory tower when you should be helping people. And that's where she's coming from in her entire role, as she is Batman, but poor. And that's the difference in this film. Like, I think that is where her character is so important, so that at the end of the movie, when you start seeing Batman realizing, hey, I have more I need to do to help Gotham. Being Batman is not the only thing I can do. And the movie is explaining that at the end of the movie.
I can't even argue with that because I didn't pick that up at all during the movie. So I can't even, it's hard for me to even say an argument because I didn't see that at all in the film.
Now, I will say this for like Jacob's argument. Is he is right that Catwoman is the best Batman in this movie. She actually figures out a crime that is occurring. She actually goes after bad guys and tries to stop them. You know, she actually sneaks around unseen stealthily, you know, where the bad guys cannot see her. She blends in. She's a great Batman. Unfortunately, the other one is not.
She literally puts a camera on him basically strapped a GoPro to her, says, go in there for me real quick. I'll sit out here and see what happens.
That actually statement right there supports Jacob's argument. Batman only views her as an asset. He doesn't view her as anything other than that, a criminal and an asset. So he's going to use her to get necessary information. And as the movie progresses and he gets to learn more and more about her, he learns that there's more to this. What he's doing, how he's going about his fight in Gotham is the wrong way. This is a redemption arc for Batman's story here. And Selina Kyle provides the human element. Selina Kyle and Alfred are the two characters in this movie that ground Batman, that add a human element to it so that he has that redemptive arc at the end and knows that it's not about vengeance. There's not a black and white criminal, not criminal. The world is gray, and he needs to add hope in this gray world. Selina Kyle helps offer him that. And I'm just going to throw this out there. Alfred, Andy Serkis, loved it.
This movie is an indictment on Frank Miller's Batman. This movie really doesn't like Frank Miller's Batman. He says that is like, it's an indictment on the fanboys who have gone, this is the only Batman we will ever accept. And I'm not, and that is what this movie is really trying to say. We're trying to say something about who Batman is, and about what this medium, what this character is within this medium. It's trying to say Frank Miller's Batman is not the only way this character has to be told. It doesn't just have to be the absolute, you know, ruthless, awful, basically awful person. It's trying to say, hey, this is who that person inspires, and that's what he uses, and that's who the Riddler is. He's inspiring these type of people.
Other films have done that before this,
and I think
Tim Burton's Batman.
Tim Burton's Batman doesn't do that. Sorry, no.
But in no way, shape, or form,
he is a good guy through and through in that movie, even though the police are chasing him.
That's Jacob's point. Batman in this movie is not a good guy to start off with. He becomes the good guy at the end of it. Again, this is Batman year two. He's learning. He's growing. He's evolving.
He's good enough to walk to the police station, good enough to walk into the crime scene and help discover a murder. Because they don't hate the guy. That's for sure.
But what we're trying to say is this Batman, the whole point is he is, at the beginning of that movie, essentially Frank Miller's Batman. That is who he is acting like through the entire opening of that film. And the entire point is, hey, he's inspired the worst of the worst. Some of the worst online people there who are just... He inspired Riddler to be as awful as he is because he thought that is the type of that is the type of person that he wants me to be. No, he's inspired a generation of punishers. That's not who Batman wants to be and not who he is. And that's what he's learning. Oh, I can't do it this way. And Selina Kyle's character is the one who helps that.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, I'm going to go back to Nolan. The Dark Knight touched upon this in the beginning of Dark Knight. I'm not wearing hockey pads. Boom. He's done it already. This has been borrowed from other movies.
It takes that element and goes, that's actually interesting. Because what if instead of just them being, hey, we're just incompetent, we're killing people. We're killing people and actually being truly awful.
The Joker is doing that also. The Joker does that in Dark Knight. The thing you're asking is done in the Dark Knight with not only the hockey pad guys. The Joker is a complete reaction to what Batman is. He basically creates Joker, is what the point of that movie is. He is like the polar opposite.
Joker created the Joker. He's just the polar opposite of Batman. Yeah. Batman didn't create Joker in that one. Created the Riddler in this one.
Gary Oldman says escalation. We put bullets in their guns. We put on bulletproof vests. They put on,
But that's not said in the Dark Knight. That's said at the end of Batman Begins.
Yeah, which is literally a reference to the Joker.
The Joker created the Joker. The Joker is an agent of chaos.
I'm not saying he created
Batman. Batman literally rips the mask off of one of the Riddler's henchman in this, and he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm vengeance." And that is exactly what Batman is known throughout this movie. That's his line, is vengeance. So it's this is copycats, but in the wrong way. He's inspired the worst of the worst to become, to Jacob's point, the Punishers of Gotham. And that's not what he wants. At the end of the movie, he realizes that fault. He realizes that mistake. He realizes what he can become and who he needs to become to save Gotham. And that's hope.
I'm not arguing that you got that isn't what he's saying or those are the themes. I'm arguing that it's so poorly done that by the time those moments come, instead of like being inspired, my eyes are rolling in the back of my head. So to me, it's about the structure. Go ahead, Benny.
Yeah. Well, if those are the themes, that is fine and dandy. But then they went after those themes at the expense of making an entertaining movie. Like
I disagree on that.
Very boring.
You don't find this movie entertaining?
Not at all.
I find it fairly boring after the first watch. Boring.
Oh, that's horse shit. Because you'll sit here and be like, I could sit and watch The Irishman in theaters all day, every day. Okay, that's a 3-hour. That movie is longer than this movie. I'm sorry. I like The Irishman.
I'm not talking about the length.
I found it intriguing.
I'm not talking about the length, by the way.
I can't sit there and rewatch that movie and be riveted every time. This movie is an action-packed
Avengers movie. Endgame, Infinity War, close to 3 hours, and I have a great time from beginning to end. I don't care about the length. I'm not saying because it's boring because it's long. I found it boring because I wasn't interested in the action sequences. I think the fight choreography in this is pretty bad.
You guys have the blinders are called nostalgia. You're unwilling to give up your nostalgic prejudices.
Good fight choreography?
Because you just immediately turn everything to The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight.
You're defending the fight choreography in the Batman trilogy, in the Dark Knight trilogy, over this?
It's not good either. I don't think that Batman.
This is 10 times better. This is 10 times better.
Here's what I'll say.
This is actually good, and he looks like Batman.
Go watch The Dark Knight. You can see some of the guys are like counting off their cues. They're like, 1, 2, 3, drop the gun.
I agree with it. I agree. I think The Dark Knight trilogy's weakest aspect is the fight choreography. It looks weird. The martial arts that they created in Batman Begins reuses all elbows, looks weird and funny. I don't think this movie, I'm not saying it's as bad as Dark Knight. I think it's maybe a tad better, but a tad better than bad is not good. And watching this, the fight choreography, I was more excited for the fight choreography because, I mean, I think Batman, unfortunately, in the Justice League movie and Batman v Superman, that's the best bat fighting I've seen probably in a movie. The warehouse scene of Batman v Superman, that's Batman fight choreography that I want to see. The fight choreography in this movie?
Batman killing people.
It's fine. Yeah. No, you take away that blood splat and the grenade, he only killed two, I think.
Batman kills people.
Are you kidding me? He has Alfred go up with a chain gun on the Batman blade and take out a whole third.
Again, I'll remind both sides. I'll remind both sides.
We're not arguing.
Batflick is not on trial.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
What I say by it is unentertaining is the movie meanders for no reason. There's no consistent through line. Like, there's multiple places where you were like, okay, this would be a good place for this movie to end. And this would be a solid ending for this movie. But it just keeps bypassing and bypassing.
I actually don't know where you're talking because I think the movie comes to a natural conclusion at the right spot. I don't know where other examples would be.
When he goes to meet the Riddler in Arkham, everything after that is superfluous and random. Like, the movie could have just stopped right there and it would have been an okay movie. The extra 45 minutes of these convoluted plots with these machine gunnists and floods, completely unneeded, completely pointless.
No, that's the point. That's the, hey, this is who he's inspired. This is when Batman, this is the finale of Batman realizing, oh my God, this is what I have done. And then pays the consequences. We actually get a Batman who, for once, has to pay some consequences that he fucked up.
His consequences is he had to go and move a grate. He had to move a guardrail.
Is half of Gotham's flooded.
You're acting like Riddler didn't have anything to do in this movie.
Batman fucked up. Like,
a lot of things you're saying about Batman is the Riddler. Riddler is the one who inspires a lot of these guys, goes out, recruits them, puts rifles in their hands, and organizes them. Just because Batman recognizes a guy from earlier, and they've been radicalized by the Riddler. You keep saying that they're radicalized by Batman. It's the Riddler who radicalizes them.
Riddler idolized Batman and then used that idolization to start radicalizing other people under the influence of Batman. So it is still Batman inherently. Like, it's still the way Batman goes about it is what radicalized these people.
I see what you're saying, but I still put more of the blame on the Riddler than I do Batman. Anytime you dress up in a costume and you again inspire another crazy guy to dress up in a costume and he brings it to, he just evolves what he did to another point. So
idea, there's an inspiration. For every inspiration, there's a muse. Batman is the Riddler's muse.
Not going to disagree.
He took that message that Batman was trying to portray, and he perverted it. And he took that group that he was able to recruit. And from there, I mean, look, Batman has to clean up the mess. At this point, he has these crazy nutbags. The movie can't end after that Arkham scene, which the Arkham scene is fucking awesome.
It's one of the five good scenes, yes.
But you can't end the movie after that. What happens? There's this community. It shows his online presence. It shows these people asking about or giving recommendations on detonators and asking about what type of guns they should bring to this event. And then on top of that, like earlier in the movie, the mayor had asked Bruce Wayne to get more involved. And then who is the person that Batman saves in this movie? It's the mayor.
He doesn't save her. She gets shot.
He saves her from flooding. She's behind with all of those people, which is one of the best shots in the movie. Where
all
he's
those
got
people
flare
are
and he's walking
move.
Out.
He doesn't save them. He literally goes over and he moves a crowd barrier that any human being can move 6 feet, and then they walk out. He wasn't even needed for that.
They follow him. They don't walk out on their own accord.
It's because he had a flare. They would have followed any douchebag with a flashlight.
a guy with a nice orange vest. I think they would have followed him.
No,
all right.
No humans jumping into that water.
All of them were in that water. No human being was
not
in that
choice.
Water.
He went
not
into the
not
water.
There. Not who's going in to save
I
any of them.
Yeah, I would have jumped in there.
First responder.
No, you wouldn't have. You don't know how to swim.
I'm a great swimmer. Let me ask a quick question of the defendants here. I want to get back to the Catwoman again. Her story with Falcone and that whole the father thing, how did that add to the story, you guys? Because it felt unnecessary to me. I'd like to hear your defense of that storyline.
Moose?
Either of you, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I froze there. okay, so number one, if the Big Lebowski taught us anything, it's you don't fuck with the Jesus, right? So Turturro as Falcone, superb. The relationship between the two, throughout the movie, there's this tension between her and him and every scene that they're in together. And you think he's just kind of that, you know, douchebag gangster who just kind of flirts with every person. But then there's just know-how that, like, she knows he's her father. But I also think that he knows this too. He just has never really revealed and maybe doesn't necessarily care that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually, like, the two of them and the relationship of them being father and daughter, again, this creates another arc of redemption for her. She has the opportunity at that point in time to, one, he killed her girlfriend. Two, you learn that obviously, like, he killed her mother. She has the opportunity and has him dead to rights, but doesn't end up killing him, which, again, separates her from the cat burglar poor villain to being, okay, a little bit of an anti-hero there. She wants to do it. The Batman convinces her differently. It's not like she can't fight Batman, turn around, grab the gun, and shoot Falcone. So I actually look at that arc between Turturro and Zoe Kravitz as a positive. I actually like the arc that is his daughter. I think it brings closure to Catwoman. She can leave Batman now. Or excuse me, she can leave Gotham now and move on to another city. Yeah, she's going to go be a cat burglar. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say.
She mentions it at the end. She says, like, I'm going to go find some, like, CEOs and knock off a hedge fund or something. But, look, she's always going to have that, like, villainous, you know, devilry in her. But that's what makes Catwoman Catwoman. She always tiptoes that line of good guy versus bad guy. You know, she's right there in that anti-hero spot. So I thought it was a good, solid closure for her character. I don't anticipate her coming back in future Batman movies. I think you could put a pin in her character. Maybe down the line she comes back if there's a third or fourth movie, but I don't think we need her character at this point in time. She did what she needed to do. She offered the human aspect to Bruce Wayne. She had her own redemption. Boom, she's out. Don't fuck with the Jesus.
Look, I think she will be coming back just because contracts and Zoe Kravitz is a big enough star. But yeah, she was popular, yeah, I think she will, but I agree with you. I don't think she needs to. I think her arc was kind of wrapped up then. But I do. I agree. I think this is the showing the human side of that not every villain is a villain to Batman. That sometimes that, and I think that that is an important part.
He hasn't been able to figure out that they are.
Listen,
just can't let that go, can you?
No.
That's your one argument.
I don't understand that he's an idiot in this movie. I don't see it, and I don't get where that comes from because I don't think he is.
Well, let's get to El Rato. I mean, that was even I who took middle school Spanish.
But at the end, the clue was leading to Falcone. It wasn't because he didn't speak Spanish. Because it loosely translated, it was a rat with wings, right? A bat. Yes. No, it wasn't. A rat with wings was the Falcon, a Falcone, right? So even that doesn't necessarily mean like he's an idiot because he translates it incorrectly.
I don't even know how he came up with that translation. A rat with wings, like that's a bat, is not the first thing I'm going to.
If anything, that's a shitty clue on the Riddler's end.
All right, I agree. All right, gentlemen, we could get into the semantics of the riddles all night. But this does bring us to a very important point, which is Oswald Cobblepot himself, a significant character, I would argue, at least ostensibly, in the plot. So please get into it and comment on this because, you know, obviously, you know, before we get to any sort of, you know, closure here, we need to make sure we comment on another significant character, I would say.
Yeah, you guys keep shutting me out, so I'm going first on this one.
Go, Betty.
Go.
One, first off, this is a terrible character design for the Penguin. Now, Colin Farrell did a good job with what he was asked to do in this movie, and the makeup that they put on him was excellent. But here is the issue. They made him into like an Italian leg breaker, and his last name is Cobblepot. That's not what the character is necessarily supposed to be. Now, that they decided to do that, that is fine. But if they do it, why waste all the time doing this makeup to make Colin Farrell look like a fat Italian guy? There's no rule that says he can't look like Colin Farrell and be that the way that they're going. If they're going to change the entire dynamic of who the Penguin is, just let Colin Farrell look like Colin Farrell and change it if you're not going to stick to what the character is anyway. So I thought it was like a really bizarre character design for no reason. And then, like I said, the character itself is fine, but he was also, like, in many ways, superfluous. Like, Batman shows up. He doesn't really tell him anything. He walks away mad. He captures Batman. He points out that Batman is a bad detective, and he walks away, and he is fine. So, literally, the only purpose of Oswald's entire character in this movie is to point out how bad of a detective Batman is, which he did a fine job of his own. And then at the end to say, oh, you're a rat. I have morals. So the character was unneeded, and it was a weird design for the character.
Interesting. I'll say this real quick, before, and I'll let you guys defend. I don't think, again, a lot of my issue with this movie is not the acting or the actors. I think Colin Farrell's one of the highlights of the film. He's got his own show coming to HBO Max. I'll check it out because I think Colin Farrell has a lot of fun in this costume and with the character. I do agree. He does feel like he's just kind of there. It doesn't really work into the whole plot. It almost feels like a setup for his movie and his new show in some ways, which fine, but that doesn't help this movie. I will say, and you know, this will I'll never forget watching this in theaters. And one of the most things I was excited about in the trailer was that upside down shot in that whole chase scene. And I hate to say it, and I love action films, I thought the whole chase between him and Batman was kind of lackluster.
It was a terrible chase.
I think it looked like they put GoPros on all different parts of the car, the wheel, the side. I give him some credit for trying something different, because he definitely said, I think I read an interview where he's like, I didn't want to just shoot a regular car chase. I wanted to put the cameras in some spots that usually wouldn't see it. And I see what he's trying to do. But at no point when I was watching that scene in the theater, even though it sounded amazing and the engine was roaring and everything was cool, the way it was cut together, and I can't really say the way it's cut together, but I guess the pacing of the whole chase, I never felt my pulse pounding. I never felt my adrenaline pumping. When I watch like a Mad Max movie, or, you know, even you go back to movies like The French Connection and Bullet, those are great chase scenes. And I see him trying to create a great chase scene, yet for some reason, I was just emotionally detached from it from the beginning. I'm not saying it was filmed horribly, but I don't know. I think when it comes to action sequences, especially car chases, there's a rhythm. There's a certain rhythm that you have to connect, and it just didn't connect with me. Again, that's a little more subjective. That's me talking. I can't say it's 100% clearly bad, because I'm sure it worked for you two guys.
Yeah,
but something I saw in the trailer I was really excited about, and I did not enjoy it in the theater.
Before you guys go into the chase scene, I would say that I'm with JTE on here, is that there, I think there was a good chase scene there. They just didn't show it. They just kept going close up of the tires, close up of Colin Farrell's face, close up of the tires, close up of Colin Farrell's face. Yes. So I think there was a great chase scene, but the way that they angled the cameras or what they chose to edit into this chase scene made it happen almost completely off camera.
I don't know. I enjoy the chase scene. I think that, like, I'll argue, okay, I don't know how much I can push back on the penguin stuff, because I'm like, I kind of, if there was a character who is a little, hey, he's in here before his TV show / world building / welcome to the world, we're here, like, then it's Penguin. And I get the logic of, well, we don't want to put Falcone in straight away. We kind of want to have that one little bit of a barrier between Falcone and the rest of the club. So I understand that. I get the logic of why Penguin's in there. I also get why Jonah Hill didn't want to play that role, and why he was like, no, I want Riddler. And they said, no, can you be Penguin? So, like, Penguin is the one that I may give you, but I ain't going to give you that chase scene. That chase scene's awesome. That's, like, the one where it's like, okay, the chase scene, like, this may have made Penguin worth it, because I really love that chase. I think it's awesome. And I think it makes Batman fucking terrifying in that whole sequence. He's just like it follows. Like, it's like, holy crap, this thing's just going to kill me.
That's the idea of the chase scene. That's why you're seeing it from the Penguin's perspective, is because Batman is horrifying in this chase scene. No matter what you throw at him, no matter what car the Penguin knocks into Batman in the Batmobile, he's going to keep coming. And so you see the Penguin starts in a point of, like, hysteria, because he thinks he's knocked him off. He's like, I got that friggin' psycho. And he's laughing to himself. And then he's going like, oh shit. And then he keeps laughing. He's like, this guy's crazy. And then all of a sudden he's like, you're a psycho. Like, it's just fear as the Batman keeps coming. And yes, when it tumbles upside down, and he sees the Batman walking, and the flames are behind him, and he sees the Batmobile come through it. Oh, it's superb.
Great shot. It's a great shot.
Counterpoint, though. Like, with every other time with the Penguin in this movie, when you get to that great ominous scene where he's walking up the fire, so there's a good culmination to the chase. Like, every other time with the Penguin, he just walks away, and nothing happens. Literally 3 hours later, the Penguin is back at the club doing his job. So it all amounted to nothing. Like, he didn't arrest him. He didn't do nothing.
So the introduction to I enjoyed Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I actually enjoyed his look far better than any of the other Penguins that we've had theatrically. Obviously, Burgess Meredith was meant for comedy, right? I love the Danny DeVito Penguin, but pretty spot on with the Penguin, right? The Penguin and the Riddler are both, like, especially when it comes to Batman's, like, rogue galleries, they're both very like, actually, you know, they're just kind of shtick characters. In this one, the Penguin, you mentioned it, Benny, but you know what? It's the truth. He has spent his entire life being a mob enforcer.
His face is scarred. Obviously, he's taken beatings. He's doled out beatings. This is a guy who has lived a rough life. And the introduction of the Penguin is to let you know that there's not just one villain roaming around Gotham. There's Carmine Falcone. The Riddler is obviously the chief villain. You can't keep tossing in villain after villain after villain after villain and make them all a threat, and then it's just too much. The Penguin, obviously, or in my opinion, he was the comedic relief. Some of the funniest scenes in the movie were Colin Farrell as Oswald Cobblepot. I dug the whole vibe. I liked the way that they went with it, rather than him just being this like weird, you know, misshapen man who, you know, is going to stab you with an umbrella. No, like the dude can actually be a legitimate concern. And he's going to be a legitimate concern. Yes, of course, there was the world building and that he was going to be getting his own series from this. But at the end of the movie, it's teed up that there is a power grab potentially going to happen. And who is the person that's going to be the person to seize that power? The person who is always the second in command, the number two. That's Oswald Cobblepot. So it's establishing him as a future threat, not as a threat at the moment.
Yeah, Andrew, I agree.
The entire premise of the TV show is the power grab.
Yeah, I agree with most things that Moose said. Colin Farrell is not my biggest issue with this movie. He's there. But that thing is, he does feel like setup. I feel like a lot of the characters, like Catwoman, feel like setup. I think she will be coming for other films. This was just a setup. It felt like a Catwoman movie was shoved into this movie, and then it felt like a pilot for The Penguin Show was shoved into this movie. I think we should talk a little bit about the Riddler, because he is the main villain of this. We're talking about villains. I'll keep mine pretty short. I liked him when he was being shot through a little digital camera. I liked his look. But the more and more I saw Riddler, the more I saw the actor playing Riddler, I think the scene between him and Batman in the jail cell is kind of a mess. I think it goes on way too long. And I recently read that they spent 48 hours, I believe, shooting that scene, and they did like 100 or like 50 takes. And it feels like it. It feels like they didn't know what they were doing, and they were exploring and improvising. And watching that scene, it feels like it goes on double the time that it does. And I do feel like he's overacting in that scene. Like it feels like he's in a Joel Schumacher film at times when he's giving that whole speech to Batman. He is so just
I'm sorry, Sylvester Stallone wasn't available to play the Riddler, JTE.
Well, come on, Stallone would have been horrible as that. All I'll say is I liked him throughout the film. I liked the Riddler, but I thought once you got him out of in that jail cell, if I saw the actor and I didn't see the Riddler, I saw Paul Dano giving a real hammy, over the top performance, and I was just rolling my eyes. Again, that's how it played for me, but I liked him. I liked everything from the Riddler leading up to that point. So it's kind of a mixed bag for me.
I think the jail scene is you are seeing a man realize his entire self-worth meant nothing. His everything about his self-worth was that I am doing this for Batman. I am doing this for this man. And here he is finally talking to him face to face. And he's telling him he's crazy. He's telling him you're a sick individual.
Does he act like a normal human in that scene?
He's insane. He acts crazy. Heartbroken. He acts like his entire world just got shattered and he is mentally dealing with it. And not in a good way. He is losing his mind and just completely and utterly losing any semblance of stature and structure in his life because everything he knew has just gone. He had built up this idol who has just turned around and gone, "You're fucking crazy." And he's just gone, "No, I'm not. No, you're wrong. No, what? No." And can't handle it. And that's where that scene comes from. I will give you the Joker JTE scene, the Joker Riddler scene.
That scene can
get the fuck out of the movie. I am not a fan of that one. That can get out of the movie. But yeah. Like everything else with the Riddler, I like if the Riddler's last scene, it should have been that prison scene, and I would have loved it. I think that would have, that so perfectly sums up that story of his whole world has been shattered because Batman has gone, you are fucking nuts. I am not what you think I am. No, that is, you are hurting people, and because he thinks he's hurting the right people, and that's not what Batman believes.
And I think the thing I gotta, you know, say again, I don't disagree with anything you said. The execution is where I think it fails. I think the writing, the acting, I don't think, I also, and, you know, Robert Pattinson in this movie is so one note for me the whole time that all these themes that come to, you know, the realizations that he comes to towards the end of this movie, it feels like it just washes over his face because it's, we don't get any Bruce Wayne in this movie, which I think was a choice. Well, not yeah, true. you get very little, and he is basically emo Bruce Wayne. The scene with him and Alfred.
You know the name of the town is Gotham, right?
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
You can't listen. Use the emo argument if you live in a town called Gotham.
Michael Keaton was in Tim Burton's Batman. That's the most Gotham, gothic.
Again,
Tim Burton, you're going to get very returns.
Your nostalgia blinders, JTE, and be willing
to when somebody to makes a delicious change. Cake. And I'm not gonna, and I eat the next cake and it tastes pretty sour. I'm gonna say that last cake was way better. I'm not gonna forget that other cake. So people have done a lot of things that this film is trying to do in a much better, more coherent way than I think this film is doing. This film feels like it grabbed pieces and themes and ideas from all the other previous Batman films and did it in a much less successful way. I'll touch more on that in the end.
Yeah, so sorry, continue.
Go ahead, Benny.
I was gonna say, I would disagree with JTE here. I thought the Riddler was the best part of this movie.
He wasn't until the end for me.
So part of the reason that I have sort of a dislike of the movie is I thought you had a really good villain, and I thought you had a really great portrayal of that villain, and then the movie just kept wandering off on all these little side quests instead of staying with that villain. And I thought it took away like so much from the movie by doing that. And for whatever reason, me personally, one of the things I've become very frustrated with is watching mediocre movies where I see that somewhere in there, there is a great movie. And if this had just been Batman and that Riddler, you know, in a battle of wits, there's a great, great Batman movie in there. But instead, they gave me this meandering one with all of these side quests that was mediocre. And to me, that's a greater sin than a terrible movie. Like the Schumacher Batman movies are god awful, but at least they're god awful and campy. This one is just mediocre, but it had greatness in it that it didn't give us, and that drives me nuts.
So, the Riddler was one of my favorite parts of this movie too. Since we're talking about Paul Dano and his portrayal of this, and what was great about the Riddler was, again, when it comes to Batman's rogues gallery, the Riddler is never really the biggest threat to Batman, right? If you look at even like the Joel Schumacher version, like Jim Carrey, he's not the most intelligent guy in the room. They kind of force you into it, but it's all very slapstick. Same again, I'm going to compare him to Frank Gorshin's, you know, Batman 66. Same thing. In this one, there's a scene in when they're in the jail cell, and he's like, look at you, how strong you are. He's like, my threat is up here. You're so physically imposing, I could never take you on. Like, but then he puts this entire city through this, and he is like a bit of a physical menacing presence. The opening of the movie has him murdering the mayor of Gotham City, like brutally murdering the mayor of Gotham City. So I like the many like different dimensions that like Paul Dano does. I think that prison scene is outstanding. Don't give me the we're wrapping up signal here, JT, as I'm disfounding your arguments here, pal. But I will say that in Pattinson's defense, like it was obviously a very conscious choice of the director and the story to feature him more in the suit than outside of the suit. He does not want to be Bruce Wayne. It's pretty obvious he doesn't want to be that man. He wants to be the Batman. This is all he cares about. And you start to see him more and more come out of the suit, right? He visits Alfred out of the suit when Alfred's in the hospital, right? He has that awesome scene between him and Andy Serkis where he finally admits, like, okay, I feel like I thought I had buried this emotional connection to people. And he's like, but I haven't. And that's kind of the start of his redemption. He goes and he sees Carmine Falcone as Bruce Wayne. He goes to the mayor's funeral as Bruce Wayne. Yeah, he shows up as Batman later, and he's secretly there because he thinks that the Riddler is a serial killer and will show up to his crime scene. But I do think that there's a good balance between the two. And yeah, Robert Pattinson, for most of the beginning of the movie, is one note. That's the note he chooses to be. He's vengeance. That's his note. As he progresses throughout the movie, he's not so much vengeance anymore. He starts to humanize. At the end of the movie, it's funny. He has this option, go off with Catwoman, and then he sees the bat signal in the sky, and she's like, ah, you're spoken for. And he has that, like, great moment where he's looking in the rearview mirror right before the movie ends, and he just has this, like, he has this little smile on his face as he just guns it and goes to Gotham. So I do think that there is a lot of a, like, I think Pattinson brought a lot to the character. And yeah, you can say emo and you'll hear my Gotham remarks again. But again, what is Batman? Batman's a creature of the night, dude. He's out every night. He's got to look the part. He's got to be a pasty pale dude. He doesn't have time to go and tan it up and live on the beach. Like, that's exactly what you want out of a Bruce Wayne.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I disagree with so much. I'm not even going to get into it.
Well, look, guys, I have to say, both sides were starting to get into some you know, overlapping and interesting points that I think play into the larger points you're trying to make. So unless there are any stones left unturned, I think we can move into closing statements, can we not?
Yeah, we'll take a break, come back, and we'll come to a verdict by the great Adam Collins.
What's lean? Mean. Dresses in green.
It keeps me safe when I'm jogging at night.
And makes Batman see red.
Now that's impressive.
Val Kilmer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, Nicole Kidman, Chris O'Donnell. Batman Forever.
Peter Travers of Rolling Stone raves, prepare to be wowed. A thunderbolt is about to rip into summer movies.
Now there's a Batman.
Feverish, dazzling, devilish, visionary. The Dark Knight soars on the wings of imagination.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
The Dark Knight, rated PG-13, in theaters and IMAX July 18th.
All right, welcome back, one and all. We have arrived at our closing statements from both sides. We're going to take turns here. I'd like to start with the defense. Jacob, take it away.
Look, are there problems with this movie? Small ones, yes. But you know, I personally don't think it's overly long and or bloated or, you know, any of the common associated arguments. But I can understand why some people would. However, deep down, this movie is a unique, original, and different approach to Batman that we haven't seen before. It is one that offers an actual critique on the history of Batman and one that says he needs to be better. This is a character that needs to be better. This is a character that can approach ways in how they handle being a superhero different than how any other film has decided to showcase this character. And I think that that is something that makes this unique and different to a point where it deserves its own spot and to have its own franchise as an exploration into this character. So that is why The Batman is an awesome movie.
All right. Moving on to Benny from the prosecution, please.
So I will say this, the best things about this movie, even if you're someone that doesn't like it, are the visuals and sort of the gothic voiceovers, you know, where it does try to be like a noir detective movie. But those things that it does well, it is specifically lifting from The Crow and Zack Snyder's Watchmen, and both of those movies do those aspects better. So it is an homage that doesn't quite live up to the originals. And I don't think anyone is breaking particularly new ground in the Batman story. It's a pretty repetitive story. All the Batman movies are almost similar in their stories. I don't think this movie is doing anything particularly unique, and that's not a bad thing. You know, Batman does not have to be a deep-seated, you know, literary masterpiece. It just has to be an entertaining movie. And this movie was not. It wasn't a horrific movie, but it did the greatest sin a movie could do, and it was forgettable. It's not a movie that I care if I ever see again. Like, I'm not upset if somebody puts the Batman on, but at least the Schumacher movies, which I think are actively bad, at least they're memorable. This is by far the most forgettable Batman movie that they have made. Like, would I watch it before I watch the Schumacher ones? Yes. But I will forget about it faster than I will any of the other Batman movies.
Understood. Understood. Moving back to the defense. Jacob, I appreciate how passionate you are, even as a silent actor. Moose, take it away.
While I won't be as silent as Jacob in the defense of this movie, I will say this. Look, Matt Reeves obviously loves this character. He treated it entirely different. He took a big swing with this movie. And look, I think he even knew that there was going to be a bit of divisiveness with this movie, because Batman in this movie is not the hero at the beginning of the movie. He's playing to be the hero, but he's not. By the end of the movie, he becomes that person. This movie is about that arc of him becoming the true Batman of Gotham City. There's a lot of commentary, social commentary, that's peppered pretty heavily throughout this movie. You see the dangers of social media. You see the dangers of the wrong message being sent. There's a lot to be said about this movie, and it grounds this movie, and it almost feels like this is what Batman would be like and his villains would be like if he existed in our world right now. He is tactical in this movie. The outfit that he wears, it's not like he's got all these super great, amazing, incredible inventions. It looks like he made most of this stuff himself. And so I appreciate that. I think that that makes him tactical. When he jumps from the top of Gotham PD Tower and he puts, and his suit converts into the flying squirrel suit, that is incredible. And to know that that was done practically, and there wasn't, like, obviously there's CGI after he jumps off, but the suit itself converted that way. That shot is incredible. I understand that there have been many Batman movies before this. This one took the biggest swing in that Batman was not the hero at the beginning of the movie. And you can argue, fine, he's not in Zack Snyder's Justice League, or this guy did it better in this, and this guy did it better in this. Listen, this movie took a big swing, and it hit. Matt Reeves loves this character. He deserves a franchise with this character. Where DC went wrong was they greenlit that as there was already another Batman existing in this studio. That's what makes it all that more intriguing, is the fact that DC was going to allow Matt Reeves to make a villainous Batman. And I say that, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, because at the end he does become the hero, but his intentions are flawed at the beginning. His message is flawed at the beginning. And I think we've all had that redemptive arcs in our lives. Why doesn't Bruce Wayne deserve it?
All right. And back to the prosecution to close it out before I deliver my verdict. JTE.
I'll start off by saying the squirrel suit was maybe one of the worst moments of Batman ever put on film.
You're one of the worst moments of Batman ever put on film.
The man has a cape and he has to zip up Velcro and fly like Rocky Bullwinkle squirrel off a dam. And they put a GoPro on his back, which I guess made it look cool. And then he crash lands on a car and skips away. That scene alone is the whole movie in a capsule for me in some ways. This movie made Batman for the first time uninteresting and uncool in a lot of ways for me. I think when you take a character like Batman and you ground him in reality, more so than Christopher Nolan, by doing that, you have a responsibility as a filmmaker who is building out this world to explain how this Batman works in this world. And because it is so grounded and dark and at times feels like a David Fincher 7 movie with the Riddler, that worked for me. But the problem is then you have a guy in a bat suit who walks up the front doors, knocks on the door, walks through the police station and crime scenes wearing, you know, boots, black, you know, steel toe boots and a bat suit. And at that point, you have set the world at such a grounded, realistic level. And then you did not build your main character to fit into that world. And to me, that is a responsibility of Matt Reeves. I agree. Matt Reeves took a big swing, but he missed. He missed. It was a fastball down the middle. He tried to hit it out of the park. Maybe he hit it foul. I'll give you that. He made contact, but it went foul to the right. He did not hit a home run. I think there are a lot of great ideas in this movie. I think there's a lot of themes that he was playing with. And in fact, maybe too many, because at times the film goes off to the left and right with other side characters. And at the end, he tries to put it all together. And it really just kind of felt like a mess to me. I did not buy this Batman in this world. I did not think Robert Pattinson portrayed the character. He did okay, but he wasn't even in a lot of ways given the material in the scenes I think that he needed to show that he could be a great Bruce Wayne / Batman. I think at the end of the day, I put the responsibility for this movie being a failure. That has to be in Matt Reeves' hands because he wrote and directed this film. I think it's beautiful looking. I think the score is fantastic. And I think they got an A-plus cast. But at the end of the day, I think the movie fails building a world where this Batman is in this grounded of a world. And I think it's just the story is all over the place. It's meandering. And the motivations for a lot of these characters, even though the motivations are there, they're jumbled and they're kind of messy. I could probably go another 2 hours. I could do a Roger Ebert scene-by-scene breakdown of this movie in a classroom and tell you what is wrong and what doesn't work. But at the end of the day, that's my opinion. I did my best to express why this movie doesn't work for me and why I walked into that theater the day it came out. I was on cloud nine. I could not wait to enter that theater and come out with my hands in the air, just being on a cinematic high. A cinematic high is something that I think all of us reach for. When I left Mad Max Fury Road, I was on a cinematic high. When I left Batman, I left scratching my head and wondering, why was I bored for 3 hours? And why am I feeling close to nothing as far as my love for this character? That's all I'll say.
All right. Well, if I may, gentlemen.
Please.
This has been a stirring debate, to say the least. The thing I love the most about Batman as a character is the way he inspires passion. Because what I see in common all across the board here is a love for Batman. Am I right?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
In his purest form. That's where I'm coming from. I have a long history. I feel like I've known Batman longer than I have my own memories. He's that indelible. He's that ubiquitous. And I also think that can lead to a struggle sometimes with oversaturation in the zeitgeist. You know, Batman and, you know, even though he's not on trial here, Spider-Man both suffer from this, in my opinion. And I'm not trying to debate the merits of either superhero, but I'm just saying they both objectively have disproportionate cinematic adaptations. And I think that can lead to a little crowding of the field. Now, with that in mind, what I appreciate about, the defense is coming to this from you know, a place of having watched and engaged with this movie, at least on a couple or a few different occasions. I can tell you've lived with it. You've examined the themes. You've kind of checked it out from end to end. And on the other side with the prosecution, JTE, Benny, I love how you're coming at this from a place of you're trying to look out for your boy, right? You're trying to make sure he's okay and that he's still cool no matter what happens. And I think what we can all agree on is that Batman's going to be cool no matter what. Now, my personal opinion of this film doesn't really matter, and I'm not going to try and get into that too much right now. But what I will say is, at the end of the day, I think when there's all these Batmen running around, and, you know, Pattinson had the uphill battle of doing this on the heels of a lot of Ben Affleck movies, and we've even had a Ben Affleck Batman performance since this movie's come out, which is kind of bananas if you think about it. And I also think it's important to separate this movie from that as much as possible. But the reality is that because there is so much Batman, there's so many cinematic adaptations of him, I think what's important to keep in mind is he is, unfortunately, someone who, at this point, no matter how hard Matt Reeves or Zack Snyder or anyone puts their passion into it, it's going to be divisive. I think that what I saw from the prosecution, it was well articulated, but I do think it comes largely from a place of personal taste. I do think that while the defense comes from a place of personal taste as well, I did see them seizing upon a lot of the themes, the core themes of what makes Batman, Batman. And I think what I appreciate the most about the defense is they defended this movie from the perspective of loving Batman. Not that the prosecution didn't make their argument from loving Batman as well, but I think that at the end of the day, there's more to build upon from this film than to tear down. And that is why my verdict lies with the defense.
Congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, but if I were still a practicing lawyer, yes, I would have things to say, but that's for another show.
Me and Benny, I feel like, did our best to explain to us why this movie didn't work for us. I do agree that they gave a great explanation of the themes and what Matt Reeves was going for. I was just more about the execution.
Listen, you're now court ordered to like this movie, JT.
I know. I will change my Letterboxd score. I have not Letterboxd it yet. I was going to give it 2.5. I will now give it a 3. I will up my Letterboxd score from 2.5 to a 3.
Solid foundation.
Go ahead, Benny.
So clearly this court is more corrupt than the courts in Gotham. This ruling was absurd. You were on the take. This movie was garbage. The movie's still garbage.
I appreciate Adam, that fair and measured response.
Adam, I will be sending you a jar of my grandma's sweet tea. Sweet peach tea. What was that from Batman and Superman?
Peach tea. Beach tea.
By beach
I will take that as an invitation to return.
Understood.
That is my favorite line of the night.
All right. Well, Adam, thanks so much for coming on, man. Thanks for judging this. You know, you did a fair job.
You guys didn't make it easy. You guys were both ego.
I guess we could sign everybody out. Adam, we'll start with the judge. Where can people find you, and what do you want to plug?
Just keep tuned in to Champs on Film on YouTube. You can find us on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram, YouTube. We have stuff in the pipeline that'll be coming out in the next few months. And then I wrote a little article for Passion Fruit, the website managed by Drew Grant, Video Drew, as we know her. I wrote a review for the Shudder original Influencer. So if you Google Adam Collins Influencer review, you'll find it. Please read it and tell your friends.
Nice. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. Jacob.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Of course.
Yes, thank you, man.
My pleasure.
You guys can find me pretty much everywhere, just at Jacob London. Don't really have anything else going on at the moment, but I'm watching movies and hopefully hanging around these parts.
Jacob, you were the best. I could not have asked for a better co-defender of this movie. I love you and appreciate you. Thank you, sir.
That was awesome. Thank you very much for having me on here, guys.
We'll call that a night, folks. The Batman is a great movie. Yeah. Wrap up the podcast and go watch it right now. Court ordered.
It'll help you sleep.